HHS has a tremendous amount of data, PII and PHI, right? So we've got a lot of personal health information as well. And so we take that responsibility very seriously, but we also want to make that data available, right? We want to make it available to researchers. We want to make it available for outcome studies. We want to make it available to patients, right? We want people to be informed. That's really the mission of HHS. So in order to do that, we have to have a very robust program around securing the data from an infrastructure standpoint, from an application standpoint, and from the data itself. And so really it's a combination of all three layered together. And then we couple that with an active monitoring program and a very aggressive security resolution when we do have incidents.
Let's talk about that active monitoring program. I realize there may be some sensitivities, but at a high level, you guys have a security operations center that you guys set up. Talk about the SOC a little bit, as much as you can.
So HHS is a very large federal agency. It has a number of very large entities within it, National Institutes of Health, Centers for Disease Control, et cetera. Medicaid, Medicare, obviously. So they each have a tremendous amount of data, networks, logging. You can imagine all that they collect. But what we did not have was a central coordination center. So we built one. It's actually located in Atlanta. And what we do is we bring all of the security log data from throughout the entire department into one location. The beauty of that is that it's allowed us now, when we see something happening at an NIH, we can span the entire network to see if it's occurring anywhere else, where in previous to that inception, it wasn't possible. It was more relationship-based. So now it's more automated, it's more real-time, and we can act very aggressively to deal with that.
The SOC was put together over the last few years through Recovery Act money. Did I understand that correctly?
That is correct. In fact, 2009, we received Recovery Act money. Fortunately, Recovery Act money was two-year money. We spent that 2 years designing, building, and ultimately implementing and launching our Security Operations Center. And we used an approach where we allowed local enclaves, so we gave the control to the operations, but we then centralized the collection so that we kind of had the best of both worlds.
You guys also set up a deep dive analysis team. Talk a little bit about what that does and how that works.
So basically what we wanted to do, what we recognized is we're getting lots of alerts. We get a lot of metadata alerts, with data about data, obviously. But what we wanted to do was literally look for that needle in the haystack, that anomalous pattern that some of the bad actors utilize, some of the techniques, if you will. To do that, we had to really look at our security data in very much a big data kind of way, bringing it all together, but now applying those types of analytics to it as opposed to the more traditional cyber operations. So that team is also based at the CSIRC in Atlanta, and its mission then is to identify the tools, techniques, procedures, indicators of compromise for those specific actors. And we're up to the point now where we're identifying somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1,000 a month that we're then utilizing to inform our tools so we prevent them on the front end.
The 1,000 a month are incidents, are alerts, are targets, are pings, or how would you describe as a combination of things?
What that 1,000 a month is actually what we're producing for our networks, for our sensors, if you will, to consume is indicators. So we're finding anomalous behavior. We're identifying it. We're in essence creating a profile, and then we're putting that profile in the system so that our sensors can recognize it and stop it before it ever starts.
And this is all done automatically. This is not people having to look through it to some extent, or it's
a bit of art. So it's a combination of both. So it's absolutely automation. We're talking tremendous amounts of data here, but you still need humans. So we still need somebody to make sense of that data, and it takes a very special skill set in order to be able to do this kind of work.
The security of the data, as we talked about earlier, is obviously a lot of PII, very important whenever you talk about any security data. But at the same time, you're also trying to say, okay, how can we kind of mash up some data from different parts of HHS to really tell us what's going on beyond the security piece? How does security play a role in ensuring that mashup can happen and happen, obviously, in a way that protects the privacy, civil liberties, but also provides value?
We've traditionally done it by siloing the data, so that we maintain it within our specific sub-organizations, and so it's protected in that way. But now we recognize the value of unlocking that and bringing those data sets together. So what we've got to do is take not just the underlying siloed current security, but now we're going to have to overlay a level of security but the interoperability and collaborative nature of that type of infrastructure. So we're designing that now. We're looking at those pieces. We're trying to decide sort of what goes into that mashup and what maybe doesn't make sense, recognizing that it will be an evolutionary and iterative process, but security is designing, being designed up front before we ever begin doing any data collaboration or, you know, bringing that data set together.
A lot of agencies have a similar challenge. One term that I've heard several times is data security as a service. Is that something you guys are looking at, or can you give me a sense of what are some of the things of maybe some of the concepts that you're saying this may be able to work for us?
Not a term of art that we use. We tend to, and I say we, frankly, I set up the service catalog. So we take a more service catalog approach. So we'll say we've got these specific areas, whether they be forensic, deep dive analysis, SOC services itself. So we do a number of things, and we augment our operating divisions who have more or less budget in this particular area. But we want to maintain a certain minimum benchmark across the department, so we utilize a service catalog approach to do that. And it's actually been very effective. It's a more efficient way of spending dollars. It also allows folks to focus on their core competency instead of trying to be everything in every situation. They can rely on us when need be for that sort of esoteric expertise. And that combination of security teams working together has been very effective for us.
One of the challenges that I think anyone in your situation as a security person has is trying to get non-security people to understand why it's important to secure the data. Yes, there's an open data mandate. You make it, you know, machine readable and get it out there and see what innovations can grow from it. But there's still, in your end, you have to be that person who has, okay, but let's make sure we do it the right way. How do you talk to the non-security people about the importance of data security?
Well, typically security folks tend to talk about it from a confidentiality aspect, protect, and that sort of thing. And unfortunately, that tends to not resonate with actual end users, whether they be producers of data or consumers of data. They're really more interested in the integrity from a research standpoint and the availability. I want what I want when I want it type of thing. So particularly as it relates to HHS, we have a tremendous amount of research data, as you might imagine, that we produce. Very often scientists have a tendency to see security as a nuisance and getting in the way of, you know, science and, you know, curing whatever they happen to be working on. But the reality is what we found is by going to them and having perfectly open and honest conversations about what would happen if the integrity of your research was compromised? You begin to relate it to how they see the world, their worldview, and then all of a sudden security, it becomes less of an evil and more of a necessity. They still want it to be minimal, but they do recognize the value. And that's what I found overall, is you've got to relate the need for security to the particular audience or needs of the individual who's, you know, maybe fighting against it.